This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 1 Kings. And now here's Pastor Sandy in 1 Kings chapter 6 with today's edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
In the presence of God, there's always life, and life more abundantly. Then he built a 20-cubit room at the rear of the temple from floor to ceiling with cedar boards. That 20-cubit room was the Holy of Holies. And he built it inside as the inner sanctuary, as the most holy place. Now, Solomon's temple followed a similar layout as to Moses' tabernacle. There was the outer court that contained the bronze altar and the laver where the priests washed. Then the temple proper, the 90 by 30 by 45 structure, consisted of two courts. The innermost court of the Holy of Holies was 20 cubits square, or 30 feet square, 30 feet long, 30 feet wide, 30 feet high. Inside the Holy of Holies was the Ark of the Covenant and God's Shekinah glory. In the holy place sat the menorah, the table of showbread, and the altar of incense. And on either end of the holy place were doors or veils of separation. Now here's the dimensions of the holy place. And in front of it, the temple sanctuary was 40 cubits long, or 60 feet. The inside of the temple was cedar, carved with ornamental buds and open flowers. All was cedar. There was no stone to be seen. So you had a holy place that was 60 feet long, and then you had the Holy of Holies, which was another 30 feet long. The inside of the temple, he says, and he prepared the inner sanctuary inside the temple, or the Holy of Holies, to set the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord there. The inner sanctuary was 20 cubits long, 20 cubits high, and 20 cubits high, 30 by 30 by 30. He overlaid it with pure gold and overlaid the altar of cedar. Solomon spares no expense, notice. The walls, even the floor of the Holy of Holies, were all gold-plated. Now, I know your wife's made you put down that nice little wood stuff on the floor, and you wonder, why are we spending so much money on a floor? But that's nothing compared to the floor of the temple. Cedar boards, cypress boards, overlaid with gold. What a amazing structure. Verse 21. So Solomon overlaid the inside of the temple with pure gold. He stretched gold chains across the front of the inner sanctuary and overlaid it with gold. In other words, along the doors into the Holy of Holies. They had this gold chain that sort of reinforced that idea of separation between man and God. He says the whole temple he overlaid with gold until he had finished all the temple. Also, he overlaid with gold the entire altar that was by the inner sanctuary. Inside the inner sanctuary, he made two cherubim of olive wood, each 10 cubits high. These olive angels stood 15 feet high. One wing of the cherub was 5 cubits, and the other wing of the cherub 5 cubits. 10 cubits from the tip of one wing to the tip of the other. These are two angels. They have 15-foot wingspan. Put them both in the Holy of Holies, and they span from one side of the Holy of Holies all the way to the other side. And the other cherub was 10 cubits. Both cherubim were of the same size and shape. The height of one cherub was 10 cubits, and so was the other cherub. Now, Hebrews chapter 9, verse 23, we've been studying Hebrews, by the way, tells us that the tabernacle, and evidently the temple that followed, were in reality a small-scale model of God's throne room in heaven. If you want to know what heaven's like, you need to study the temple. And whenever we're allowed a glimpse into heaven, we always see angels hovering around God's throne. Solomon's temple also had its angels, these gold angels made from olive wood. Now, here's an interesting detail. In Revelation chapter 4, verse 6, when John sees the heavenly scene, he sees four living creatures, or four of these cherubim. It's interesting that Solomon made two cherubim for the temple. But if you recall, the Ark of the Covenant also had on the lid, or on the mercy seat, two cherubim that went up and covered the top of the Ark. So when you add Solomon's two angels and then the two angels on top of the Ark, what do you have? Solomon's temple also has four cherubim in the Holy of Holies, just like the throne room of God. Well, then he set the cherubim inside the inner room, and they stretched out the wings of the cherubim so that the wing of the one touched one wall and the wing of the other cherub touched the other wall. And their wings touched each other in the middle of the room. Also, he overlaid the cherubim with gold, golden angels. And then he carved all the walls of the temple all around, both the inner and outer sanctuaries, with carved figures of cherubim, palm trees, and open flowers. And the floor of the temple he overlaid with gold, both the inner and outer sanctuaries. Now, before he died, David had stockpiled materials to be used in the temple construction. 1 Chronicles chapter 22, verse 5, David said, "Solomon, my son, is young and inexperienced, and the house to be built for the Lord must be exceedingly magnificent, famous and glorious throughout all countries. I will now make preparation for it." And verse 14 mentions 100,000 talents of gold and 1 million talents of silver. And does anybody remember how much a talent is? About 100 pounds. And bronze and iron beyond measure, for it is so abundant. Verse 16 of 1 Chronicles 22 sums it up. Of gold and silver and bronze and iron, there is no limit. In today's gold market, the temple, just the gold, would have cost $30 billion. Now, imagine a building that when you include the outer court was only about 14,000 square feet, much smaller than our church. Imagine a building with 14,000 square feet costing $30 billion. I haven't figured out the square foot price, but that's pretty spendy. Solomon's temple represented the glory of God on earth. When folks passed by, they were supposed to whisper, "Wow! There has never been a building constructed as lavish and as extravagant as the Temple of Solomon." He says, "For the entrance of the inner sanctuary, the Holy of Holies, he made doors of olive wood. The lintel, or the header, and the doorposts were 1/5 of the wall." Now, it's interesting. The veil in the tabernacle was replaced by a door in the temple. Can you see it? You see, in this tent, Solomon's temple, there was a door there, not a veil. And of course, somebody, you know, is gonna ask, well, wait a minute. When Jesus was crucified, didn't the veil in the temple, wasn't it torn from top to bottom? And indeed it was. But remember, it was a different temple. Solomon's structure was destroyed by the Babylonians in 586 BC and then rebuilt later by Zerubbabel and then King Herod. The temple of Jesus' day was called the Second Temple. And apparently they went back to what was in the tabernacle, which was a veil. But in Solomon's temple, there was a door. Verse 32, "The two doors were of olive wood, and he carved on them figures of cherubim, palm trees, and open flowers, and overlaid them with gold. And he spread gold on the cherubim and on the palm trees, so that the door of the sanctuary, he also made doorposts of olive wood, 1/4 of the wall. And the two doors were of cypress wood. Two panels comprised one folding door, and two panels comprised the other folding door. Two double doors, a total of 4 panels. And then he carved cherubim, palm trees, and open flowers on them and overlaid them with gold applied evenly on the carved work. And he built the inner court with 3 rows of hewn stone and a row of cedar beams." That means that the stones, you remember the inner height of the temple was 45 feet. That means that 3 layers of stone, these stones had to be 15 feet high since the ceiling was 45 feet. I'm telling you, these were some enormous stones, which really made the temple one of the ancient wonders of the world. It would be a tough job for a modern construction crew, let alone ancient builders. This would have made a great episode for Extreme Engineering. What a contrast, though, between the tabernacle and the temple. This is important. Look at the contrast. The tabernacle was temporary, whereas the temple was a permanent structure. The tabernacle was erected in the desert, whereas the temple was built on a mountain, Mount Moriah. The tabernacle was ugly to the eye. When you approached it from outside, all you could see were the dark badger skins that served as its covering, Whereas the temple, you saw the temple glistening in the sunshine, and you thought, wow, what a marvelous sight. Everyone in Jerusalem could see its beauty and its glory. It's interesting. Just as there were two dwellings for God on earth, the tabernacle and later the temple, there are two comings of Jesus Christ. Catch this. Tabernacle represents his first advent, whereas the temple, his second coming. The first time Jesus comes, he comes to a desert land, a world marred by sin. At his second coming, Jesus brings the mountain of God to earth. He purifies the planet, and he reigns over the whole earth from Jerusalem, from Mount Zion. The tabernacle was ugly, whereas the temple was glorious. You could see the beauties of the tabernacle only from the inside. And likewise with Jesus. You remember, according to Isaiah 53, we're told of Jesus' appearance that it was without form and comeliness, that we should desire him. In other words, Jesus lacked a physical attraction. You had to get to know Jesus to see the beauty and the glory. Same with his first coming, same with the tabernacle, but when he comes the second time, he will radiate with glory. As the disciples saw him on the Mount of Transfiguration, glistening in white, glowing and shining. That's how he'll come when he returns. Radiant, beautiful, a magnificent Savior. His first coming was temporary, short-lived, just 30-some-odd years. Then he was crucified. But when Jesus comes again, he will reign and rule forever. He'll establish a permanent kingdom. Isn't it interesting? Tabernacle represents Jesus' first coming. The temple represents his second coming. Verse 37. In the fourth year of the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid in the month of Ziv. And in the 11th year in the month of Buel, now we're in October, November, which is in the 8th month, the house was finished in all its details and according to all its plans. So he was 7 years in building, and he's rounding it off. Actually, it was about 7.5 years it took to construct the temple. Now, in chapter 7, the author pauses the discussion on the temple to mention a few of Solomon's other architectural achievements. Verse 1. But Solomon took 13 years to build his own house, so he finished all his house. It's interesting. The king spent twice as long building his palace as he did building the temple. He also built the house of the forest of Lebanon, which may have been a summer retreat for the royal family. Its length was 100 cubits, its width 50 cubits, and its height 30 cubits, with 4 rows of cedar pillars and cedar beams on the pillars. And it was paneled with cedar above the beams that were on 45 pillars, 15 to a row. There were windows with beveled frames in 3 rows, and windows were opposite window in 3 tiers. And all the doorways and doorposts had rectangular frames, and window was opposite window in 3 tiers. This was his summer palace. Verse 6, he also made the Hall of Pillars. Its length was 50 cubits, and its width 30 cubits. And in front of them was a portico with pillars, and a canopy was in front of them. This hall may have been an addition to his palace there in Jerusalem. And then he made a hall for the throne, the Hall of Judgment, where he might judge. And it was paneled with cedar from floor to ceiling. And the house where he dwelt had another court inside the hall of like workmanship. Solomon also made a house like this hall for Pharaoh's daughter, whom he had taken as wife. Gotta make the wife happy. All these were of costly stones cut to size, trimmed with saws inside and out, found the foundation to the eaves, and also on the outside to the great court. The foundation was of costly stones, large stones, some 10 cubits and some 8 cubits. My, 10 cubits long. That's 15 feet, some of these stones, huge stones. And above were more costly stones hewn to size and cedar wood. The great court was enclosed with 3 rows of hewn stones and a row of cedar beams. So were the inner court of the house of the Lord and the vestibule of the temple. Verse 13. Now King Solomon sent and brought Huram. This is not Hiram. This is Huram from Tyre. He was the son of a widow from the tribe of Naphtali, and his father was a man of Tyre. He was a half-Jew. He was a bronze worker, and he was filled with wisdom and understanding and skilled in working with all the kinds of bronze work. So he came to King Solomon and did all his work. Solomon hires this man from Tyre to do the bronze work on his projects. And he cast two pillars of bronze, each one 18 cubits high, 27 feet high, almost three stories. In a line of 12 cubits, measured the circumference of each. They were 27 feet high. They were 18 feet in circumference. Two huge columns. Then he made two capitals of cast bronze to set on top of the pillars. The capitals were caps that went on, ornamental caps that went on top of the pillars. And the height of one capital was 5 cubits, and the height of the other capital was 5 cubits. This extended the pillars another 7.5 feet. He made a lattice network with wreaths of chain work for the capitals, which were on top of the pillars, 7 chains for one capital and 7 for the other capital. And so he made the pillars and 2 rows of pomegranates above the network all around to cover the capitals that were on top. And thus he did for the other. I mean, these were just ornamental, beautiful pieces of work. The capitals which were on top of the pillars in the hall, and he's not talking about the temple any longer, but the hall of judgment, they were in the shape of lilies, 4 cubits. The capitals on the 2 pillars also had pomegranates above by the convex surface, which was next to the network. And there were 200 such pomegranates in rows on each of the capitals all around. Now he goes back to the temple. Then he set up the pillars by the vestibule of the temple. He set up the pillar on the right and called its name, gave these pillars names. The one on the right he named Jachin, which means he shall establish. And he set up the pillar on the left and called its name Boaz, which means in him is strength. Top of the pillars were in the shape of lilies. And so the work of the pillars was finished. Do you have the picture? Do we have a picture of it? There you go. To the right, there was Jachin. And to the left, there was Boaz. The bronze posts were a reminder to the priests as they came in, as they went out, that we are established in God's truth and God sends us out in His strength. We're established in God's truth and He sends us out in His strength. We should take and establish those pillars in front of our church so that when you walk into the doors, you remember that we are established in God's truth. This is what brings stability. This is what establishes a life, God's truth. And then we go out and serve in God's strength. Verse 23, and he made the sea of cast bronze, 10 cubits from one brim to the other. In other words, 15 feet in diameter. It was completely round. Its height was 5 cubits, and a line of 30 cubits measured its circumference. It was 7.5 feet high. It was 45 feet in circumference. Below its brim were ornamental buds encircling it all around, 10 to a cubit, all the way around the seat. And in the seat, it was a giant basin that was kept in the outer court where the priests would wash before they entered into the presence of God and did their sacrifices. The ornamental buds were cast in 2 rows when it was cast. It stood on the back of 12 oxen, 3 looking toward the north. These all bronze figures that were formed by Huram. 3 looked toward the north, 3 looked toward the west, 3 looked toward the south, and 3 looked toward, you know which direction? The east. You got it. You guys are quick. The sea was set upon them, and all their back parts pointed inward. This is how they constructed it. Here's a huge bowl sitting on the back of 12 oxen, their back parts all pointing together in the outer court of the temple. Now, the sides of the sea was a handbreadth thick, and it's the length of your hand. That's how thick the sea was, a handbreadth. And its brim was shaped like the brim of a cup, like a lily blossom. It contained 2,000 baths. Now, I wanted to know how they knew that, because it really depends on how deep your bathtub is. Never mind. 2,000 baths. The bath was a measure of about 9 gallons. Now, I don't know. When you take a bath, does it take 9 gallons? That was the measurement called a bath, 9 gallons. But 2,000 baths meant 18,000 gallons. So the sea held 18,000 gallons of water. We know from a parallel account of the temple's construction in 2 Chronicles chapter 4 Solomon also built a huge bronze altar where the sacrifices were offered. Have a picture of that? There we go. You see the sea to the left. You see the altar to the right. The outer court of the temple contained both a mountain, which is the altar, and the sea, which is the laver. So there in the outer court was the mountains and the sea. And this depicted two types of cleansing. The blood cleanses the spirit of a man. It washes our spirit clean, whereas the water washes the outer man, washes off our hands, cleanses our mind. You know, cleansings today come in two types. The spiritual, the inner cleansing takes place when you trust in the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. But there is an outer cleansing that we need daily. There's a refreshing of the mind and motive and thoughts and heart. This comes when we open up the scriptures and we pour out the water of God's word upon our minds and lets it cleanse us and lets us just roll over our thoughts and our assumptions. We need both these types of cleansing. Well, in addition to the bronze sea, you can read verses 27 through 39. They tell us that Solomon also made 10 more lavers for the outer court. They all sat on carts. You can read about their construction on your own tonight. But I love the idea that God's cleansing was on wheels. Did you get this? You see the little one down, the little one? There were 10 of those, but they were on carts. They were on wheels. And think about this. God's cleansing was on wheels. I like that, though, because it reminds me that the Holy Spirit follows me. Because He knows throughout my day I need numerous cleansings and refreshings. And so the Holy Spirit's just after me all day long, just kind of rolling around right behind me, cleansing me and washing me and purifying me. Verses 40 through 46 contain an inventory of all that Hiram made for Solomon. Verse 47 tells us that they didn't even weigh the total amount of bronze. So much was used. They didn't even weigh it. Verse 48, thus Solomon had all the furnishings made for the house of the Lord, the altar of gold, and the table of gold on which was the showbread, the lampstands of pure gold, five on the right side and five on the left in front of the inner sanctuary with the flowers and the lamps and the wick trimmers of gold. And notice here another point, the one menorah that was in the tabernacle, it was replaced by 10 golden lampstands in the temple. Interesting. Verse 50, the basins, the trimmers, the bowls, the ladles, and the censers of pure gold and the hinges of gold, both for the doors of the inner room, the most holy place, and for the doors of the main hall of the temple. Even the hinges were made out of gold. Now, can you imagine? So all the work that King Solomon had done for the house of the Lord was finished. And Solomon brought in the things which his father David had dedicated, the silver and the gold and the furnishings. He put them in the treasuries of the house of the Lord. Now the construction is finished. Solomon plans now an open house, and guess who pays him a visit? Of course, God shows up at Solomon's dedication, and that's where we'll be in chapter 8. You got it? You understand the temple and all now? You got it? Everybody's expert on the temple? Got it? Great. The tabernacle represents what? First coming of Christ, the temple spoke of second coming of Christ. Remember, when you study the Old Testament, there's one rule. Look for Jesus on every page. Look for Jesus on every page. There's pictures of Him everywhere. And here we see a beautiful picture of Jesus. Not necessarily His first coming, but His second coming. Go back and read through the chapters and try to look at it from that point of view and see the wonderful nuggets and truths that the Lord might show you.
You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. Pastor Sandy comes to us from Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain, located in Atlanta, Georgia. In today's message, Pastor Sandy continued through the book of 1 Kings. This book serves two main purposes, but as is true with much of the Bible, there are lots of other lessons peppered in between. The first main point isn't something you would expect to find, but it's no less important. The writer is providing guidance on how to properly document historical accounts. So you could say it's a history lesson on how to catalog history. Not very glamorous, but without it, we may not have ever had access to the Bible as we know it today. The second is a story about a human king who received blessings and favor from God, but later found himself driven by his own selfish desires and pride. You all know how that story ends. To hear more, visit our website, sandyadams.org. Again, that's sandyadams.org. Each time you listen here, Pastor Sandy brings sound biblical teaching as he goes through the Bible book by book, verse by verse. You'll hear the truth about real people who lived and had similar struggles to yours today. So there's always something you can relate to. We're so glad you decided to spend your time with us today. Be sure to come back again for more here on Sandy Adams Radio.